This is Tiffany Liao commenting on page 91 to 94 from Caramelo by Sandra Cisneros. And I picked this passage because I love the rich details Cisneros used when she was portraying the process of weaving rebozos, and I especially loved her literally delicious description of the caramelo rebozo itself. And reading this, I found that this description of weaving is paralleled in both this passage and really this entire novel. For example, in inventing the Reyes family story, there are numerous instances of weaving as Celaya braids together threads of time, narrative, various truths, culture, language. As you can see, her voice is a lively blend of Spanish and English, and so on. And for this podcast, I'm only going to focus on a few specific examples of this weaving, but I hope to go much more in depth in our class discussion. And so there's a lovely moment in this passage when Celaya explains the motion or the act of weaving a rebozo as a culmination of generations of female knowledge. So it is as if all the mothers and daughters were at work, each woman learning from the woman before, but adding a flourish that became her signature, then passing it on. That's on page 93. And this weaving of the caramelo rebozo parallels Celaya's recounting of the Reyes history. Like a weaver, Celaya is drawing on the knowledge of the mothers and daughters before her. She takes from her grandmother, her mother, Auntie Lightskin, stories and gossip and truths that have been altered with each of the woman's own embellishments before she combines them into her own tangled and multi-layered caramelo tale. And in this sense, the caramelo rebozo also serves as a physical representation of the intricate Reyes saga. Tellingly, the caramelo rebozo has five tiras, and Celaya's saga also spans five generations, beginning from Ambrosio and Eleuthero's generation and ending with Toto's children. And like Celaya's family history, the caramelo rebozo is unfinished, an inextricable mystery that refuses to be unraveled or erased, but leaves little clues to how it should be continued. Interestingly to me, Cisneros emphasizes that weaving, and thus as I interpret it, preserving family history, is a female task. Since only women can be emputadoras, Cisneros suggests that women are the ones who are given the responsibility of telling and repeating the stories of their family, and they are encouraged, of course, to sprinkle in their little healthy lies on the way. After all, Celaya calls weaving the language of knots and rosettes, of silk and artesella, of Khan and Akkad dyed secrets, and it appears that acquiring fluency in this language grants women story weavers a degree of voice and agency. By embroidering their own little flourishes on the main family history, the Reyes women can preserve a bit of themselves in the Reyes narrative. Yet this begs the question, what happens when this language of knots becomes lost? Since Guillermina passed away before teaching Soledad how to weave, has Soledad found her story and thus agency stripped away? Or has she found an alternative way to pass on her signature flourish? What happens to the language of knots is simply lost in translation in the Chicago suburbs? Has Celaya found a way to leave her mark on the caramelo rebozo? Fortunately, Cisneros seems to suggest that part of this language seems to be inherent. As Guillermina explains, it's my hands that know, not my head. A sentiment we later see repeated by her illegitimate granddaughter, Candelaria, when she turns leaves into a rosette for Celaya. Perhaps one instance that shows both Celaya and Soledad have figured out a new way of speaking this language of knots is in the lively, humorous exchange that the two share on page 91 to 92. Celaya breaks from her narration of Soledad's past to inform us that Soledad will suffer a seizure that leaves her speechless, with so much left unsaid. Yet this passage shows that Soledad still has a voice, and she constantly interrupts and even scolds Celaya as she attempts to begin the story. This exchange exemplifies two types of weaving. First, of time, we get a glimpse of Soledad's future, past, and present timelines tangled together, and then also of a weaving of Celaya and Soledad and even Guillermina's voices. Something interesting happens when Celaya and Soledad verbally spar. The two voices seem to both confirm and threaten the truths of the other. Soledad's transparent attempts to smooth over the caught-dyed secrets of her past only corroborate how closely Celaya's story strikes at the heart of her unhappy marriage with Narciso. Similarly, Celaya's romanticized exaggerations and fairy-tale-like beginning, once in the land of Los Nopales, are regularly reined in by Soledad's shrill voice. Does the weaving and sometimes entanglement of these two voices strengthen or weaken Celaya's caramelo tale? What other effects can be seen from this interplay of narrative voices? Briefly, all this talk of threads and weaving also reminds me that while the caramelo rebozo is at times knotted and unfinished, it still follows a pattern. This brings to my mind all the repetition or pattern-like behavior we see reoccurring within the Reyes family history. We see phrases, especially the mantra, just enough but not too much, and behaviors, the children born or nearly born out of wedlock of Eleuterio, Narciso, and Inocencio, repeated throughout the Reyes saga as if they were simply following a pattern or perhaps the destino or destiny that is so often mentioned in caramelo. Can the Reyes family resist these patterns or destiny? If so, what is some evidence of this? In our class discussion, I look forward to exploring some of the questions I've raised, as well as investigating other instances of weaving or embroidery that we see in the novel. I look forward to seeing you in class.